Welcome to another SEMO Fractional Marketing Podcast. I can't even say my own business name. There you go. It's been one of those weeks. If you don't know who I am, my name is Simon Dell. I'm the CEO of SEMO. If you don't know who SEMO is, CEMOH.com. We are Australia's largest fractional marketing network, probably the world's largest fractional marketing network, and no one's ever going to pull me up on that, so I might as well just claim that. So if you want to find out anything about us, go and visit the website. You can find me on LinkedIn, Simon Dell, or email me, simon@semo.com. I have a returning guest today. I think he's been on here quite a few times now. I can lose track of it, but welcome once again to the podcast, Chris Jowsey. How are you?
I'm doing well, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
Is this your third time or second time?
I want to say it's second.
Well, I kind of feel it was more than that, but maybe when you do third, maybe you ought to get a little trophy or something like that. So just first of all, let's tell everyone a little bit about you. You're down in Sydney, but tell us, give us a bit of your background and everything.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I'm a fractional CMO. I have been for probably the last 5 or 6 years, and my background's working in primarily digital marketing in the e-com space, working for big tech companies, and then really in my capacity as a fractional CMO, work across e-commerce brands, tech companies, professional services firms. But really, you know, my remit is how to take kind of digital strategies and help businesses grow. That's my summary.
That's perfect. Perfect. Now, today we're going to talk about something called the AusPost 2026 e-commerce report. And we're going to talk about it because there is some really interesting statistics in there. But give us a little bit of an overview about what that report is and who's producing it. Obviously, it's Australia Post, but for the people that perhaps aren't in Australia, give us some context in that.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, Australia Post, obviously our main delivery network here in Australia. AusPost, I think, have been producing this report for about 10 or 11 years, I think. And so I'd say it's really the leading report in Australia around the e-commerce market as far as kind of sales activity, as well as what are the key trends in market as it pertains to kind of e-commerce. And really that's kind of ramped up since COVID. So, I'd say each year now it's published around the March timeframe, and it's a good insight into kind of what's been happening in the last 12 months around e-com and consumer behavior, I think, in this space. And, I think there's a couple of interesting trends and how things are shifting.
Yeah. And I have to say, there is a lot of data in it. There is a lot of information, and largely all of that information is extremely interesting and pertinent to anybody that is operating in any sort of online retail space in Australia, or if you're not in Australia and you're still selling into Australia, it's important as well. But we're not going to be able to sort of look at every single stat, otherwise we'll be here until Saturday. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at, I just wanted to sort of highlight a few of them and just get your thoughts on the numbers, the trends that are changing, and the long-term impact of that. And I think, you know, the first one is obviously we're all spending a lot of money online. It's according to the report, it's $82 billion, which is a huge amount. But I think that the interesting, well, the most notable part of that is that growth seems to be slowing down. So what was your thoughts on that? It's 14% year on year, but that's slowing compared to what it has been.
Yeah, I would say if you look back in the last 5 years, if you think about since COVID, there was a huge amount of growth that came off the back of COVID in e-commerce in general, obviously with lots of businesses shut down. So we saw this big kind of upward tick in that kind of 2020, 21, 22 period. And that was really, you know, that was a goldmine for most businesses at that stage. And then probably 2023, 2024, we started to see a bit more of a slowdown, a bit more of a correction that had to happen. You know, that those kind of growth rates were never going to continue. And so I think 25 was, we started to see growth uptick again. So the 14% number, I think, is still pretty solid growth. But it's worth kind of caveating that this report really is up until the end of 2025. I think, as most people know, 2026 has been a bit of a basket case so far across, you know, many areas.
Chris, that's understatement of the year, that is.
So I think we kind of have to caveat onto this report with what's kind of happening the here and now. You know, if you look at the latest kind of consumer confidence numbers, they're kind of the lowest in, I don't know, 50 years or something. So already things are really slowing down at a fast rate. Obviously, RBA's taken interest rates up. So, yeah, it's going to change a lot or already is happening. So we should expect that these numbers are going to soften a lot are doing.
A couple of other interesting things that I saw is that online retail is 24% of total retail. So we'll talk about traditional retail in a minute as well. But one of the other interesting numbers here, two interesting numbers. Number one is that 41% of people are shopping online fortnightly. And the one that really stood out to me was 16 retailers per household. So what that means is that the average household, and this is average household, is buying from 16 different online stores. And I guess my question to you is, can you think of 16 stores that you buy from online?
Well, I think there's probably the four or five go-tos for most things. Yeah. And then I reckon if you go through my credit card statement, there's probably a whole, there's probably another 15 or 20 random ones.
Probably.
And so, yeah, I think in the stats they give in the report, I think it's doubled in the last 10 years. But I think it's more, you know, that's an indication of obviously people's buying behaviors where, you know, if you're not buying through major, say, grocery outlets or major marketplaces like Amazon and eBay and Temu, et cetera, you've probably got then, 5 to 10, retailers that you may buy from probably on a little bit more irregular basis. But it's definitely changed a lot. I think we're seeing this broader spectrum of retailers that people are comfortable purchasing from. I think as well in the last 5 years, you know, the experience for most people buying online is fairly consistent now. I mean, 5 years ago, you would stay away from a lot of e-commerce sites just because they weren't, there was no trust there. You weren't probably comfortable buying from half of them. And so you probably stayed to ones that you're probably more comfortable in, and particularly for the older demographics. And we'll come to that later, I think, as far as this huge amount of growth in that area. But I think that's probably, it's one of the bigger trends, I think, in the last couple of years is just, there's a broad spectrum now of retailers. There's also this habit as well of people buying from multiple brands. You know, I think, and this came up maybe in last year's report or the year before, where people, there's just not a lot of brand loyalty when it comes to buying online. So, you know, whether it's jumping because the latest sales are on, and particularly the younger demographic, they're quite happy with jumping between shops and brands, whoever's got the best deal. And so I think that's also a big driver.
It's interesting because when I saw that stat and I read that, I was sitting there going, do I buy from 16, whether I'm the demographic or not, do I buy from 16 different retailers? And I guess, you know, straight away you've got, you know, your major supermarkets, Amazon, as you said, Temu and things like that. And what I thought was quite interesting, certainly from me, is the variety of weird shit I buy online. And reading this report, maybe sit down and go, what was the last five things I bought online? You know, and I'm just sitting there going, this is, it was bizarre because I went, I bought a box of pesticide. So these are my last five things, Chris.
Yeah, all right, last five.
Box of pesticide, because one of my chili plants was being attacked by some sort of fungus, right? Or fungicide, whatever, right? So that was, and I was like, can I be bothered to drive to Bunnings for a $10 pack of fungicide? I was like, no, fuck it, I get it delivered, right? The second one was a party game. I buy a lot of games, board games, you can kind of see them on the back here. I buy a lot of those, you know, that's fairly standard for me. I buy way too many of them. I bought a watch off Timu because I just generally was interested in seeing what a $5 watch from Timu looks like, or it was a $10 watch. And I have to say it lived up to all of the expectations of a $5 watch. So, and then I bought some mouth guards for my kids who have just started to play rugby. And then bizarrely this morning, Chris, I bought a fucking trombone online.
It's hilarious. Where do you get a trombone from, by the way?
There was a store in Sydney. My son is learning the trombone at school. He's still at primary school, but they were like, don't buy an expensive trombone until he goes to high school. So go and get the cheap one that he can use for the next 2 years.
Just as a side thing, what baffles me, I find this from Timu, is that you can buy something for $1, get it shipped here. And how the economics of that work, I have no idea. In the sense that you can make it, you can pack it, you can ship it, comes all the way to Australia for $1. It's baffling.
The whole Timu, and what's the other one that everyone buys from Timu and
Sheen.
Yeah. I bought some stuff from there, and largely, I would probably say 25% of it has been what I would consider, you know, good value for money. You know, the rest of it has been, you know, questionable. And I know we're going off on a tangent here, but do you think I find those platforms problematic because I still don't know what I'm buying. Whereas when I'm on Amazon, I'm like, I know what this is and I know that the it's easy to return. Do you think the Sheens and this Timus of this world, are they going to survive, or where do you think that's going to go?
I think it's going the other way. I mean, if you look at the stats in the report, it's something like, you know, Timu grew like 60-odd% year on year. So it's very early days, huge amount of growth if you think about how big it is.
Yeah.
Marketplaces in Australia, I think, are like 23% of the total number. Whereas you go to Asia and other parts of the world, you're talking 50%, 60% of all online sales are through marketplaces. The whole marketplace thing, I think, is still pretty nascent here. I mean, when Amazon came a couple of years ago, obviously everyone was still used to buying through eBay and Amazon internationally, and then eBay came and set up shop here, and then, you know, more recently Timu. But yeah, I can only see it growing.
Yeah, I just find it when you, like, if you go to buy something, if you go, you know, I want a trombone, you end up being bombarded with 50 different retailers selling trombones who are all rated in the same way, have all got 4.6 stars. You just go, well, which one am I buying and why should I be buying it? And you end up buying it on price and not quality. And I think, and that's an interesting thing, is do you think there is a trend online that people are going to look for places that are going to deliver the quality to them now? Perhaps we've gone maybe through the bottom, you know, bargain basement of the internet and e-commerce, and now we're coming out the other side where people are going, all right, yeah, I still want to buy online, but I want it to be decent. I want to buy what I'm buying to be decent.
I just think what you're seeing now is that there's bigger differences, or that there's kind of bigger differences in kind of certain segments of the market that are becoming quite obvious. And whether that's kind of demographics, between differences between the young and the old, or, as you say, more price conscious versus people that see value. I just think there's a broader market now that can offer all of those things. And I just think being really clear about what your proposition is, and whether that's, as you say, it's you know, if you want to go chase price, you can chase price, but being clear about what your proposition is in market, and particularly when you go to, you know, if you decide as a smaller e-commerce business that you're going to sell via marketplaces or sell direct, you've got to be super clear about how you're going to proposition yourself across both of those, because you can get into trouble, particularly the smaller players. You know, you go and start selling products on Amazon, etc. Your margins get squeezed. It may be great as an acquisition channel, but then you've got to really think about, well, how are you going to differentiate between what you're offering on your own D2C site, you know, versus what you're seeing on marketplaces?
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to fall into the price trap then, because most people on Amazon, et cetera, are used to, used to looking for the cheapest price.
The highest rating. Yeah, let's flag that, because I think that's quite interesting. Is that one other quick comment there is that the average basket size is around $96, which is kind of where I always thought it was. So that doesn't necessarily surprise me. And again, another number that doesn't surprise me but is quite big is that 73% of people wait for a sale before making a purchase. That seems like we're all just sitting here in this circle waiting for the online retailers to discount before we make the purchase.
I mean some of that that's trained behavior, right? Because most people now are most retailers are in the cycle of Black Friday, Cyber Monday. You know, before it was Boxing Day, maybe end of financial year. There was a couple of times through the year, but most people are trained now, and you've got these big sales events, and then through the year, you've got heavy discount. And I think we just came out of a period of kind of heavy discounting the last couple of years, where retailers are kind of using that as a primary acquisition tool. The problem is everyone then starts to expect it. And particularly the younger demographics, you know, they'll essentially just jump around waiting for the best deal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the difference. If you're making a decision to purchase something, maybe that's an age thing as well, because I'm sort of going, I'm not going to sit and wait for a week, 2 weeks, or till, you know, November for a sale. You know, if I need a trombone, I need a trombone now. You know, I can't sit there and wait for that retailer to put trombones on discount. So I think personally there's purchases that are necessities and then purchases that are perhaps luxuries.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just wonder. That's 73 then just seems really high. I don't know why that's. Maybe they're not always waiting for the sales, but that's just a flag that they're looking for. So anyway, there's a lot of other stuff here. Another thing I thought was quite interesting was the buy now, pay later splitting. That seems to be a key thing. Is that something you still see growing?
Yeah, I think that this probably ties back to the shrinking basket sizes. Is that, and you've got now, there's a lot more people buying, like your example where you're buying groceries, you're buying fertilizer, all the kind of stuff you normally go to Coles, Woolies, Bunnings for. People are getting quite comfortable just buying those online, getting it delivered the next day. So that's shrinking basket sizes. And then, you know, from a payment standpoint, people are used to then just having accounts or from a buy now, pay later standpoint, splitting over four payments. It just becomes the norm for a lot of people. They may have a PayPal account and then have a buy now, pay later or both. And they'll just kind of oscillate between the two as opposed to just lumping everything on a credit card. So that's definitely shrinking. It's definitely shrinking basket sizes. But that's an opportunity in itself, because if brands are doing a good job around retention, they should be able to leverage that frequency.
I find the buy now pay later really, really easy to use, like probably too easy to use.
The
trombone was on buy now pay later. I was like, you know, because you just sit there and go, why bother doing it now? Why give the money when you don't have to give the money, especially if there's no, you know, there's no interest being charged and, you know, and all those kind of things. So, but, you know, just to sort of keep pushing through this, AI was a big part of this report. So tell me a little bit about some of the sort of key outtakes from the AI section of this.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, Australia Post were kind of leaning in heavily to really just kind of talking about in the next kind of 3 or 4 years where it's going around agentic commerce. And that's, so that's really the ability for people to buy end-to-end using AI. Obviously, we're not quite there yet. I think the stats they had in the report was something like, you know, they're expecting 30% of all e-commerce sales to go through an agent by in the next 3 years. But I think the biggest thing right now is really at that discovery layer. Most people now are quite comfortable using chat or Claude or whatever their favorite AI tool is to at least discover brands. And I think there was a stat in there around, you know, 65% of people globally are using AI for product research. And so I think the biggest opportunity for brands at the moment is really to sort out what they're doing around most people are used to investing heavily in SEO. It's shifting that budget to GEO, AEO, focus programs, making sure that they appear across, you know, answer engines and as well as appearing on Google as well from an AI mode standpoint.
I think to me, the AI thing, the danger in the AI thing is a lack of discoverability, right? And I think if you're coming onto a website that, let's say, has thousands of products, my question is, if the AI there is going to guide you through a sale or whatever it is you want, is there a danger, do you think, that customers will become reliant on AI and that the AI will make the sale so easy that the you don't get this opportunity for the customer to look at other products, to, you know?
Absolutely.
Do you think it moves that browsing aspect of being online?
Yeah, it does. And I think that there's a high level of trust that people have in it, just the way that, you know, most generative AI tools work, and the fact that most people it gives confident answers, right? So if you want to say, okay, compare this bike brand with, and you know, tell me two others that I should consider, it's going to confidently come back with, you know, two or three other options. You're not going to go past those two or three options. You're going to just consider those brands and then move on. And you'll end up just doing that, getting comfortable with that approach for everything. So unless you're in that two or three brand consideration window, most people are going to step outside that. I mean, you can see the results already where most people are using, when they're using AI, they don't click outside to even read. You know, they're not sitting there going, okay, I better go review those three brands that chat's giving me just to make sure the data's correct. People are just taking it on first pass, particularly for, you know, $10, $20, $30, $50 items. They're not going to bother going to read the detail about it.
Well, but then when that item arrives and it's a piece of shit, you go, I think that damages the whole, you know, proposition of AI. Because, I mean, there was an article this week about someone who'd made up a story and posted it on Reddit, and then, you know, 2 days later found out that ChatGPT or whoever it was saying it was the truth verbatim. You know, it hadn't gone back to check any sources. So I wonder whether retailers who rely too heavily on AI are going to find that their, you know, that browsability is going to disappear, and somehow that's going to affect their income or affect their revenue.
I mean, it's definitely going to affect shop fronts for sure. And look, there's going to be data sources like that. You know, some of them are shifting between, you know, having a heavy focus on Reddit, where others don't invest as heavily on forums as far as data sources, and that's going to shift and change. And then you've got people like Shopify who are building agent capabilities straight in, and so you know, where shops are used to having product data feed into to Google Shopping, for example, you know, they'll have those capabilities that will build directly into ChatGPT, et cetera. And hopefully that cleans up a lot of the issues that, you know, we may be seeing at the moment, just around kind of accuracy of data.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There was something else here. We're talking about the difference. You mentioned it earlier on, the difference in generational spend. You know, the older that you get, the more you prefer certainty over speed. Which is applicable in a lot of my life as well. Not just e-commerce. But boomers, and I'm certainly not a boomer, and I'll fight anyone who says otherwise. But us Gen Xers, you know, where's the growth coming from? Is it, you know, it the boomers? Is it the Gen Xers? Is there still room for the Gen Zs to be buying more?
Yeah, I think the last couple of years in the report, they've really highlighted the growth in really from Gen X upwards.
Mm.
Builders in particular, you know, which is 80 odd plus, smaller part of the market, but even boomers and builders combined, I think it's 35%. So it's a big part of the market. They've got the biggest basket size. They've got the most amount of money to spend. And so that segment in particular, yeah, there's a really good chart in there, I think, that shows the upward slope of importance of, as you say, certainty over speed. And by the time you get to builders, it's something like 95% say certainty over speed, which probably makes sense. They've got time on their hands. So speed's not that much of an issue. Whereas it's probably 50-50 when you look at Gen Z. And so if you're, you know, if you're a high street fashion retailer that's really targeting that Gen Z audience, then you've got to offer speed and certainty. Yeah, you know, there were some stats in there from Iconic around the impact of conversion for, you know, delivery next day versus delivery in 2 days. So for people in that kind of segment and audience, speed's really important. But as you say, as the later you get on, it's more important to say, hey, I'm going to deliver it on Friday and guarantee that you'll deliver on Friday versus you'll get it tomorrow.
I mean, again, I look back on all the things, those five things I bought this week, and I go, what to me was important? And now you've just said it. And there was a comment here that if you give them an arrival date or an arrival day versus some ambiguous fast delivery, that's what that older generation wants. So, for example, keep going back to the trombone, but the trombone was, hey, it will arrive in 5 days' time. So I'm like, okay, well, I will buy that because there is certainty that in 5 days' time it will be here. If they'd given me an ambiguous, hey, it's going to get there as quickly as we can, you're like, well, what does that mean?
That's right.
So I think you make, there's some fantastic points there. And I think the other thing that was in this section was parcel lockers. Have you ever used a parcel locker?
I haven't used them. I've seen them from time to time, and I think AusPost were trying to do a good job in the report and just squeezing it in, just letting people know that they exist. Look, they're quite open about the stats, I think.
Yeah.
Most people don't even know they exist, but they would consider it. So, look, I think it's one of those things. You know, if you got into the habit of using it and you found it beneficial, particularly if you know, live next to one or near one in a high density area or something, then it's going to be handy. But
yeah, I mean, expensive items may be, but you know, I live in a street where they just throw things on the front of my door and I come and pick it up later on. If someone wants to, if someone wants to steal a pack of pesticide from my front door, then they can knock themselves out. So. Last thing we'll talk about today is discovery. And this statement seems to be the most obvious statement to make here, but just talk about the impact of it. And the statement is Australians use social media now for product discovery. That seems blatantly obvious, but talk to me about how that's changing everything.
Yeah, so I think the key change most people are really since COVID anyway have really kind of shifted to social for discovery, and it's things like live shopping. You know, it's been a trend that's been big in China. We've probably all seen the memes of the Chinese female presenters who hold up a piece of clothing every 2 seconds. They're selling like $100 million worth. So that type of thing, I think, you know, in the early 2000s, we used to have live TV shopping, you know, the old Demzel and TVSN networks. You'd go on Kerry Ann Kennelly and you'd have a 5-minute slot and you'd sell your wares. And so it's basically the online version of that. And so TikTok Shop isn't currently available in Australia yet. That's probably the biggest one that's coming. And so, you know, I think eBay Live just launched last year. So that's probably the next big thing, particularly for the younger demographic. So, that's a trend I think that'll only continue.
It's you often talk about, you know, how people complaining about how the boomers have got all the money and all those kind of things. But one of the interesting things whenever I get into this argument, and I frequently get into this argument, is that if you're a Gen Z now and you have the capacity and a passion for something, right, whatever it is, you can sit and make yourself a business and an extremely successful business. Shopping online, selling things online, presenting online in a way that no boomer and, to be fair, no Gen X ever could. You could literally be starting up tomorrow, and as long as you've got your shit together, you could be making a lot of money. The options out there now, I think, for people to become e-commerce sellers without actually being an e-commerce seller, does that make sense? I think huge options out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see that with the whole influencer space. I mean, people are just leveraging their audiences really to sell product. So it's really just an extension of that.
Yeah.
But as you say, you won't need a physical shop front. You don't need an e-commerce shop front. You're really just adding a buy button to whichever your network of choice is.
And I think the other key thing is, again, in the past, you were like, oh, well, now I've got to go and source some products in China and I've got to, organize some drop shipping and all that shit. But now it's not even that. Now it's just, I'm just going to simply pass this sale on to someone else who's going to fulfill it for me. And I'm just going to take a cut or a commission or some revenue on the way through. There seems to me to be all these fantastic options for people out there as well that I think are growing and growing. And, if people out there want to make some money, you know, especially if you can find a niche, that no one is tapping into, you kind of mentioned the I tell you what this is screaming out for. If you're over 80 years old, you talk about the builders, right? The builders and the boomers, people teaching them and showing them places to go on holiday that are good for them, if that makes sense. But they need that influencer in their age range to teach them, because that would be a massive a trust thing. We've got a client who does tours to Japan, and these are expensive tours, and they're expensive. And they are really only targeted at anybody over a certain age, 65, 70. I can just imagine an influencer in that space who is that age, talking to that age demographic, absolutely making a fortune.
Absolutely.
So maybe I've got another 10, 15 years and that's what I'm going to be doing then. So, we'll finish up there. Tell us like maybe your sort of key outtakes, or if there's any other key outtakes that you think would be important for people to remember.
Yeah, I think at the top we started saying that, look, things are obviously going to slow down. That's definitely going to happen. I think And particularly now that people are looking to shop more frequently, more regularly, costs of acquisition is going to go up. And so I think you've really got to be careful about maintaining margins. You've really got to focus on retention, keeping the customers you've got. So that's, whether it's loyalty programs, having a really good EDM and automation program. These are the types of things you need to focus on now to make sure that you're basically leveraging and getting the most out of your existing customers or databases over this next period.
Okay. Look, there's a lot of information. Anyone who wants to download the report, it's nice and easy to find online. A quick search will send you in that right direction. Give it to an AI bot and tell them to get the key things out of it that are important for you. The last thing I wanted to say is if you watch this and you are interested in having a chat with Chris, Chris can obviously have a longer conversation about e-commerce and strategy and all those kind of bits and pieces. I think Chris's smiley face is on our front page of our website at the moment. Let me just check. There he is. Look, so if you scroll down the front page of the website, you'll see right there, Chris Jowsey, view his profile. You can actually connect and talk to him directly now through, that profile on the CMO website. So do that, ask him and he'll have a chat, and I'm sure he'll give some of your time free of charge for that initial consultation. So do that. He's on the front page of the website. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. Any sort of final words to everybody out there?
No, I think, it's been an interesting start to the year, and I reckon everyone's just going to hold on for what's next.
Yeah, it's certain people in certain places making financial decisions for us, I feel. But, it's not a lot we can do other than just keep our fingers crossed and hope it resolves itself. So anyway, mate, thank you again. We will plan out the third one. When you do a third one, I will get a little trophy or something like that, and then you can display it on your shelves behind you, versus me and the various assorted pieces of childish junk on my shelves behind me. So but mate, thank you very much. It's been super helpful, and I really appreciate your insights.
Cheers. Thanks, Albert.
No worries.